You're listening to Road to GEM, a podcast by Harvard Center for International Development. I'm Evie Peña, a student at the Harvard Kennedy School, and your host for today's episode. As many of you know, this season we're diving into gender and international development, and I'm thrilled to be dedicating three episodes to the LGBTQ plus movement. You'll be hearing from some of the researchers, activists, and organizers who are leading the way. Let's dive in. Today, we're zooming into two completely different countries. First up, Brazil. For that, we've got the incredible Antonia Moreira from Atelier Transmoras Association. Antonia, it's great to have you here.
Thank you so much for this invitation.
Of course, I'm thrilled to have you here. So just to start us off, can you tell us a little bit about what the most significant challenges are for the LGBTQ plus community in Brazil?
Sure. From my perspective, from what I, in my position as a trans Black person in Brazil, in a privileged region in Brazil, I can say that we have a violence problem spread throughout the community, especially towards trans and gender non-conforming people. Brazil has the highest raw number of violence and murders against trans people in the world, at least the countries where we have some such kind of data. But violence against lesbians, bisexual, and cisgender gay men are also a reality. And we see every week on the news, and it's hard to not find an LGBT person that didn't lost someone. I would say that this is a symptom of a much bigger problem also, because trans people especially are expelled from schools and other institutions that support our growth, and we face a lack of opportunities in education, employment, and even access to health. So all this lack of opportunities and inclusion make us an easy target for violence.
Right. And I think in that sense, Brazil is a sort of embodiment of the paradox of progress. The country has one of the most progressive laws when it comes to the rights of LGBTQ people, and yet it also has some of the highest rates of murders against the community.
Sure. And you are right. It's important to mention that Brazil has one of the most progressive constitutions in the world, and our rights, although not directly mentioned, gender and sexual rights, we are protected by the law, and we have seen some advancements in the last decade. The equal marriage in 2013 and the legal gender recognition in 2018. But all those rights, especially the last one, are still harder, or we face some barriers. For example, it's expensive to change my gender marks on documents. So although we have this by right, practically, we don't, Black and poor trans people, for example, don't access this easily.
Yeah, and also in the face of all of those challenges, there's still people like you and your colleagues at Transmoras doing amazing work. Can you tell us a little bit more about what you all do at the organization?
Sure. I work for 6 years now for Transmoras Association. It's a trans-led organization working towards economic empowerment of trans people and movement and narrative building that has the goal to change the prevailing sentiments in Brazilian society towards our community. We started as an occupation in the University of Campinas, one of the biggest and best universities in Latin America. Our founder, Vicenta Perrota, she received a key of an empty space in their student house in 2013, and she started there to occupy and use the space initially to do her work in fashion, and then the community start to use the space as a shelter, as a place to assemble. And for some years, we welcomed people and received people as a shelter. So people that were expelled from home, and they use that public space to live. And we foster them in to enter the university, etc. But now we are more focused on our projects in advocacy. Our flagship projects are workshops and trainings on textile transmutation, a social technology of garment production from wasted materials, especially from the fashion industry. So we aim both generating economic opportunities for our community, take advantage of the intimate relationship trans people have with garments since childhood, and also questioning the impact of Western gender and size patterns have on our bodies and upholding gender norms.
I love the idea of using fashion as a vehicle for advocacy. Can you speak more to this idea of challenging Westernized gender norms through fashion?
Sure. Our garments, what we do, we don't have size or genders. They don't have, our garments don't have the female or male segment, you know, as we usually see on stores, and even stores that are more connected with our time, that create a non-binary section, but they still invest in the female or on the male segments. We truly believe that our reality are impacted by design and by what industry offers to us. So we created this world where everything is divided. Blue and pink, female and male. So all these binary segments and design is created for us to fit in something and to choose something. So we believe that fashion can also play a role in changing and questioning those norms when you don't need to offer garment or a piece of clothes that must be from one gender or another. So for who is this T-shirt, I don't know, a person, if that makes sense.
It does make sense. I light up just hearing you talk about it. It's so true that clothes influence the stories we're telling about ourselves to the world, and we internalize them. Clothes are sort of molding those stories for us.
Sure. And to be honest, garment production is just an excuse for us to gather, to provoke the system. Every workshop or training we do, we have food, we have time for conversations, deep conversations. We bring allies. So it's usually we have trans people, we have also Black women, people with disabilities working with us. So really trying to create connections that go beyond our identities and put different people in the room to talk about their problems, but also about the challenges and the opportunities we have on the table.
And what are you hearing and thinking on the opportunity side? I'm super curious to hear what you and other people who are working with you see as the biggest opportunities to advance the rights of this community in Brazil.
Sure. In my opinion, we are living a moment in Brazil that the trans community, the LGBT community, but the trans community especially, is extremely vibrant. And by that, I mean different people working in all five regions of Brazil, fashion, creativity, music, technology. So we do have an opportunity here to, first, I would say, to stop trying to be assimilated by the hetero norm. So I think we are finally in the moment that we can explore the excellence of being transgender in Latin America and not trying to all the time show to the society how we are the same or equals, but truly explore our uniqueness and what we can contribute to society. For instance, I told you that our garments are produced from wasted materials. We don't need to produce new clothes anymore in the world. There is a desert in Chile, full of clothes that the United States, Canada, Europe send over each month, that they don't have trash anymore for clothes, and they send to Latin America, they send to countries in Africa. So we are exploring a new way to produce fashion, to understand our relationship with fabric, you know? And this is not just for us. We are not talking about sustainability or regeneration or even breaking gender norms just for trans people. This is truly what the world needs. And maybe talking less philosophically, I also think that we have an opportunity to start appreciating the differences and uniqueness we have within our community. I don't know, building alliances, because the LGBTQ is kind of a very different community at each letter and we side within those letters. And I think we are in the moment that we can rethink our alliances and how we are building our movements towards a different world. I think we are in a very delicate moment where new and older activists are kind of trying to understand the future of the movement. And I think this moment is very exciting just because of that.
Yeah, and I also think that there's something really exciting about building an intergenerational, intersectional movement. You're talking about environmental justice, and I'm just curious to hear if there are other unlikely or likely alliances that you have in mind when talking about the next stage of what the movement could look like.
Tricky one. I don't know. In general, I think we cannot be so close in our identities and our own demands. Of course, it's important to congregate as a trans community. But even inside our community, so intersectionally speaking, we have a large portion of our community from the Black community. Brazil is a country that faced slavery, and among the murders in Brazil of trans people, Black trans feminine identities are the most impacted. So I believe that we must build those layers of analysis and alliances, considering capacity, ethnicity, indigenous people, for example. They give us such a brilliant and amazing view of things, you know, because they are not, again, they are not fighting for human rights, for being humans. They are even questioning the human aspect of being human. If the human rights were written for them, were not. So, but they are not fighting for accessing human rights. They are fighting for recreating and rethinking what human is in the first place, you know. And it's, for me, it touched the modern idea that started from in the Illuminism of the separation of us, we the human beings, with the nature. So nature is what is in the forest. Cities are nature. Look what we made with nature, right? And for me, in this trans feminist, radical Black thinking and indigenous thinking together can create an entire whole new world, and we don't need to go to Mars and you know, let this world. I think we have some solutions.
Right. And I think that it kind of goes back to what you were saying before. We want a movement that is energizing and fueled by creativity. It's like inclusivity and intersectionality are absolutely necessary. Now, another thing that is also critical to fueling the movement is funding. From your perspective, what should funding look like in order for it to be accessible for the great work that you and other organizers across the world are doing?
That's such a great question, Evie. First, a funny thing, maybe kind of sad, but funny. When I was in New York attending the Human Rights Advocates Program at Columbia University, I was a fellow of the 2022-2023 cohort. I was with my other friend. It was a very special cohort because other three advocates were working with LGBTQ issues, and usually we are the only one or nobody, but that cohort especially was very special. 4 of 10 were working with this community. And I always remember one of my friends saying that if you want to spread hate to the world, we just need to say it out loud and someone will give you money. But if you want to protect LGBT rights, you need to fill out 10 pages of an application, wait for 6 months, and then receive a no. So it's hard for small and microorganizations to fight for those fundings. The majority of those funds are projects, are focused on projects and projects initiatives. So we lack of flexibility, general funding, you know. They give you the grant and they believe that the strategy you are following is the right strategy. And they don't request projects with them, with this. But it's so hard to break those this glass ceiling, let's say, of being a microorganization and fighting with those fundings. Always seems that we are in the, that there is another step and another step and another step. So it's kind of suffocating and demotivating, you know. We are in a moment that only love or need is not enough for what we are doing, because it's very necessary.
Right. Direct, flexible, and sustained funding is necessary. Funds that support the movement, not just projects. But I think that requires trust and a willingness to seize power and share power. And speaking of power, but shifting gears to another fundamental element for the movement, hope. What gives you hope in this moment?
Well, Evie, what gives me hope is the vibrant community we are building, and how we are leading the way of culture right now, Brazil at least. But I see the same in the trans people in Argentina, for example, with the trans archive. And I know that in all the country, this is happening right now. In December, the first trans woman formed in medicine, you know, received her degree. And all this news that combats, creates this different narratives, because usually we are in the news, violence, murder, etc., etc. But be yourself as creators of something, it really gives me hope. And on the average age of trans people who were killed is 35, and around 150 trans people are killed yearly in Brazil. And sometimes it's hard for us to imagine an older life, you know, it's like being old, being an elderly. And people usually, cisgender people usually are afraid of that, right? Like, being getting old. But for me, it gives me hope. You know, I imagine and I want to be old, like with wrinkles, with my friends. So this image also gives me hope, like the idea of the possibility of living a life.
Thank you so much, Antonia, for sharing that. It was a delight to have you on the show.
Thank you so much for this invitation.
Our next stop is Kenya. While the LGBTQ community still faces legal criminalization in the country, we see activists like Enosa Adera who refuse to back down. Enosa is a trans and feminist activist who works at Trans Alliance, an organization that advances the human rights for all trans, intersex, and non-binary people. Enosa, welcome.
Thank you so much, and I'm very happy to engage and to have this conversation with GAV.
Great. Why don't we get started with where we are today? Can you tell us a little bit about the biggest challenges faced by the LGBTQ community in Kenya today?
The challenges. There's still a lot of stigma, discrimination, and violence. There's still issues and challenges and problems in access and uptake of sexual reproductive health and rights services. There's a lot of report on issues to access of education to higher learning, especially for persons who come out very early. They risk challenges of rejection, parents not paying school fee, and also harassment within the learning institution from the teachers and the fellow students. We are also having a challenges around unemployment for our communities, housing and homelessness, legal and gender recognition, criminal justice. And there's a lot of also LGBT individuals that have reported increased harassment by the police officers, you know, bad treatment by the police officers. So there's a lot that is also happening in the context of criminal justice. So if I were to summarize those particular challenges, then that would be a snapshot of how the challenges looks like for our community in the country.
Right, and to say conditions are precarious would be the understatement of the year. I mean, your right to access an education, home, health, they're just not a given, right? And where law enforcement itself is going against an entire community. It does make the work that you and other leaders are doing even more remarkable. So you do have your fair share of severe challenges, but what are the opportunities right now?
Yes, there are quite a number of opportunities that are there for the LGBT movement to thrive. And this requires a lot of support. So some of the opportunities that exist in the country, we already have a devolved government making the work very easy. And most of the time, you'll find that every county has their own government as you live along the national government. So it makes even the work easy for CSOs to engage with that in that particular environment. There's a lot also progressive legal and policy environment that are also enable advancement of a few elements to thrive that are also supportive to LGBT work. There's also a lot of joint and shared national strategies that is also important for our context. Intersectional organizing, which is also very, very important, looking at how do we collate all the diversity and share one common goal with different allies, with different CSOs to push for agenda that is very inclusive for everybody. And also there are a lot of advancement in terms of policies and environment, looking at also digital engagement, digital rights, digital health. How do we also just invest in the emerging LGBT leaders and the organization to make sure the dialogues are sustained to support the LGBT communities?
Okay, so there's no shortage of opportunities right now, but how can we seize the moment? Specifically, how can funders support the amazing work that leaders like you are doing on the ground?
Yes, thank you so much. And I'm very happy that this question is coming on board around funders and development partners and researchers, how they can contribute to the work that we are also doing just to ensure we have a sustained dialogue in our community. We are also able to sustain the movement. We are also able to provide the quality education to the professionals, to the state organs, and to the private sectors. So one of the items that I will really be intentional about is the support around initiatives that address laws, policies, and strategies that depend data analytics and research. And this is a very, very important context, especially around the policy change, the policy work that we also need our community to be part of. So this is a very, very important important item that I would call I would really be interested to look at how best can we just join together and just support this particular context. Another item that I would also wish to for the funders and the researchers and even different development partners to look into is around the support programs that create space for the LGBT CSOs to demand and position themselves by bringing together state and non-state actors, including community activists, to improve their voices, agency, leadership, and governance in the decision-making spaces. This is very, very important to look at How do we also have very inclusive policies, laws that are very friendly, laws that are farming, laws that are very covers everybody in the society. So it's very important to look at how can we have initiatives, how can we have projects that bring all these people together to amplify their voices. It's very important. And the last support that I will also request from funders and researchers, and especially this one is for funders, to help us take lead in the commemorative events. And the events, I'm talking about human rights celebratory commemorative events like International Women's Day, International World AIDS Day Awareness, the Girl Child Day, Mental Health Awareness Day, Intersex Awareness Day. And this is very, very important, especially now when the county government are in a state of planning for this. And then as an organization, and let me tell you, if that happens, we are envisioning a context where we'll have an improved attitudes towards the community, we'll have improved practices, you know, we'll have the well-being and health of the community changing and positively improving. And that is a plus in our organizing.
Thank you so much for sharing that. It's so powerful and critical to have those three elements. I mean, without the research and data, it will be impossible to win policy changes. And yeah, I think funders need to recognize and use their power to convene these spaces across different sectors, and also to provide this intersectional visibility in international celebrations, like you said, in order to center the LGBTQ community. So there's a lot to do, a lot that needs to change, a lot that needs to happen. But what gives you hope in this moment?
I have a lot of hope in the movement. So much hope in the movement. I know everything has genesis and everything has an end. It has to start, it has to end. And let me tell you, today we are having a lot of struggle and we are not giving up. We start and we have to finish. No giving up. So I'm seeing quite a number of advancements. I'm seeing a lot of, we are seeing our members of LGBT persons getting into the system. We have quite a number in the legal environment who are advocates, who are lawyers. We have quite a number of lecturers who are members of LGBT. We have quite a number of individuals who are invested in business and agriculture. We have quite a number of members within the community who are foreseeing themselves into the legislative assembly. So this even gives us an upper hand to keep on pushing, because you know, once we have the numbers into the system, then it definitely means that we can always influence those particular system to support. We can always amplify our voices. We can always speak with a lot of authority. And this is very beautiful for us. And I have a lot of hope because we are also seeing quite a number of partners, quite a number of funders, you know, are supporting different initiatives. The other time we saw there was the Kaluma Bill, the Family Protection Bill that was introduced in the National Assembly. But even up to right now, we are seeing a lot of work that is being done. And we are seeing still the county government, the national government are still supporting the work around the LGBT persons. We see just the other time, we were doing the Global Fund. There was a lot of process in the Global Fund writing, and there's a lot of support that the government is also giving in that particular context. You know, that gives us a lot of hope. It also, for me myself, looking at also different advancement in the legal context and the political environment, that's a plus, and it drives me positively, and I feel so much motivated in that particular context.
Wow, that's really energizing. I think I speak for myself and our listeners when I say you've given us a lot of hope. So thank you so much for being here.
Thank you so much.
Well, that's all for today. Big thanks to Antonia and Enosa for sharing their insights. As you can tell by now, there are a lot of challenges, but there's also so much hope in this unique moment. Don't forget to tune into our other episodes. Let's keep the conversation going.